So we have three. Yeah, she's down in my office. Then we have Representative Parnell, that's four.
I didn't sign yesterday.
We have Representative Finkelstein, who has to be, make him an honorary member.
I remember last night.
Honorary members get a half a vote, so that's four and a half.
Olberg.
Representative Olberg here, it's his bill, so we'll give him two votes.
Two and a half if Terry Martin was here.
If Terry was here, we'd have the other half.
This is Billy wants us to move, right?
Representative yeah. Terry also, we got one, two, three, four, five. We're one short.
Move Terry's bill.
Thank you.
Hey, there's only one.
Oh, yeah. There's a no right. There's even a no. Man, huh?
And Representative Martin is here, so we have six. We have our quorum. We're ready to conduct business. And once again, the order today will be House Bill 397, then House Bill 406, and then we'll finish with House Bill 49. House Bill 397 is an act relating to the powers to levy property taxes in second-class cities and to combining a property tax and incorporated question. We had this bill in committee before, and we had a question in regards to a amendment. And maybe we could recognize Representative Olberg here to briefly tell us about the amendment, and then we'll go to teleconference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. When you first heard this bill about 2 weeks ago at the very end of the hearing, it was decided that, in fact, we didn't want to raise second-class city allowable mill rate to 30 mills. We decided we really wanted to raise it to 20 mills. That required an amendment. I asked to have the bill sent back here for purposes of that specific amendment. The amendment gave rise to some other questions on last Monday, one of which I think was by Representative Brown as to what fiscal impact this would have on state revenues. And I think Representative Martin questioned the deletion of the referendum provision. And I don't know if there were any others or not. Those are the two I'm aware of offhand. And as luck would have it, I don't have the answer to either one of those questions. But I think we have somebody on teleconference who does. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I don't know who that is either.
Okay, let me just check to see. Can you hear us in Anchorage?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I know we have three to be heard in Anchorage. We have Steve Van Zandt, Clyde Benson, and Robert Halford. So in any order in which you folks would like to give your testimony, we could hear from you at this time.
My name is Clyde Benson. I'm the state oil and gas property tax assessor. We don't have any testimony. Steve Van Zandt, myself, neither one of us have any testimony. We were here to answer any questions like what the revenue impact might be on the state.
Okay, let me ask then if there's any committee members. And by the way, we do have Representative Grusendorf, Chairman McLean, and Representative Brown, and I'm sure Representative Navarre is here too now. Do any members have questions of either Mr. Van Zandt or Mr. Benson? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell us what the revenue impact to the state would be from the allowing these second-class cities to tax the pipeline?
I don't have any direct answer to the question, no. You know, we'd have to know what the boundaries were of the city. Basically, for 1994, divided up to about $2.6 million per mile of pipeline within the boundary. And then if, should there be a pump station there?
Mr. Chairman?
This is not tax, this is assessed value.
Okay, Representative Oberg?
My recollection is, since most of the pipeline runs through my district, I think Delta Junction is, in fact, the only second-class city that actually takes in the pipeline throughout its length. And at this particular time, there are no taxes in Delta Junction, even though it is a second-class city. But to answer the mileage question, there might be within the city of Delta Junction 5 or 6 miles of pipeline, perhaps.
Further questions, Representative Brown?
So Glen Allen and Copper Center are not within the pipeline corridor?
They are not second-class cities. They are not incorporated in any way.
If they were to become incorporated, would they be eligible here?
Glen Allen certainly would. I doubt whether Copper Center reaches over far. It would depend on how they determine their boundaries, I would think. But it would require incorporation for either one of them to have an effect.
Representative Parnell?
How are you, Mr. Chairman? Representative Oberg, you weren't here before, and some of my heartburn over this amendment before came with the referendum question, and I wondered, is anybody online that could address what impact deleting the referendum language would have on their
municipal league
perhaps on the amendment and on?
Okay, Mr. Van Zandt or Mr. Benson, the question is the referendum. Could you speak on any impact that that might have on the various cities if the referendum requirement was to be removed?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe either Mr. Benson or myself can answer that. I think Mr. Walsh is from our office is there, and he could probably testify to that.
Okay, if he would, please.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, is he there at the general office?
John Walsh is here, yes, and we will have John testify.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, members of the committee, it's John Walsh. I'm a special assistant with the Community Regional Affairs Department. The department is neutral on the bill, and the referendum issue is, I think we probably drop back to the position that we have with other incorporated communities that are able to impose taxes like this by a vote of the council, if they will. So it's as far as I understand that, so it is.
Okay, Representative Martin?
Our problem, sir, is that we're taking away the rights that many people thought they had. And do we, as legislators, saying, well, we represent those people, which I don't, I have a right to take that away by simple legislation? How many charters will we be changing throughout the state where the people already feel they have the referendum right?
Representative Oberg?
If I might respond to that, a search of the historical record could find no reason why this happened in the first place and really no reference to it since. I would venture to say, while I wouldn't want to disagree with Representative Martin, that you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that knows they have referendum rights, although they certainly do exist in statute.
Representative Gusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that question there, I guess Representative Martin was bringing it out, Mr. Walsh brought it up. I think it's possible for a second-class city then by either ordinance or their city charter to prohibit themselves in how they wanted to handle that, where they couldn't increase the millage rate over X amount unless there was a referendum. So the way this is written, it says, they may not exceed, and then what they do in there is up to the how they want to handle it by ordinance or charter. Is that the way you look at it?
Let me explain first that I'm not completely versed on the municipal division and the Title 29 provision, so I want to make sure that I don't say something that I'm incorrect on, but I think it still provides that the city could, if that's how they would like to conduct business, bring this to the vote of the people, but this requires them to now the amendment by Representative Olberg would just leave it as a may as opposed to shall, is what I understand. And so I would say that...
Representative Parnell?
I understand what Representative Grusendorf is saying, but my concern is that they could certainly change their charters, but usually it would take a supermajority of some kind to do that. And I wonder if Representative Grusendorf could speak to that issue.
Well, Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, what I'm getting at is then it becomes a political issue for council elections and for whatever they do, and they can simply do it by ordinance. If they're worried about being too complicated to get to the ordinance part. And believe me, this would be a political a question that would arise in a smaller community, and they would float out their tax local tax caps and things just as well as some of the larger cities. And so I think that the electorate could accomplish that very easily, and the assembly people who are catering to that particular their election. So I see the state's role is just allowing, make it easier for them to make some decisions if they like.
Any further discussion? Representative Henley?
For Mr. Walsh, I just wanted a brief description, and this is where some of, I guess, the concern comes from, is why were these restrictions put in? I guess Representative Olberg mentioned that we don't know on the referendum. Why was it restricted? We just passed a bill on the floor today, which I supported. Why were second-class cities not allowed to take title to the tidelands? Why were they not allowed to do things without a referendum? Why were they limited to 5 mils? And why, you know, so what is the philosophy behind this? And I know the only difference that I can see in the bill is for a first-class city is size, number one, and number two is they're required to take education power. So maybe why would a first-class city, why would people want to take over their education powers? And I want to, you know, we're dealing with kind of piecemeal changes to, 180, 175 something communities out there, second-class cities, and I don't have a feel for how the pieces of the puzzle fit together between first, second-class, unified home rule, boroughs, the whole nine yards. So I'm just trying to get a feel for why these restrictions were put on in the first place, and if they didn't make a lot of sense and people just said them, I don't have problems generally giving more flexibility. But if there's, they were created to provide incentives for people to, or not a lot of people to do much, but if you want to go a certain bit further, then you've got an incentive to do that, but then you also have to take on more responsibility. I want to make sure we're not going too far in that we'll never have a first-class city, or we'll find all the first-class cities dissolving to become second-class cities and let the state take back over their education powers. And that,
if I might just interject, I was just advised that, in fact, second-class cities don't have charters. They operate by statute.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that gives the legislature, obviously, a role in determining what second-class cities do as it relates to taxation rates, education, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that was going to be my question to Crystal Smith, representing AML here.
But they do operate by ordinance, then.
If we do away with a referendum for a second-class city, what would make a second-class city different than a first-class? Or would we now have discredited one class of cities?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Crystal Smith here on behalf of the Municipal League. In response to your question, I think the issue is primarily the question of responsibility for education if we were to take away this referendum, as well as the size. I did a quick survey in my, because the question came up at the last hearing about how many second-class cities under current statute could even be first-class cities if they opted to reclassify, upgrade, or whatever you want to call them. And there were just 37 of those 117 second-class cities that are large enough to even become first-class cities by under the current statutes.
37 of how many?
Of 117. And then of that 37, there are just a hand, well, I would say maybe, I didn't count this, but I would say probably under about 10 that are within 400 to, you know, 500 maybe. I mean, they're just kind of over the top of the scale. And I think the point was made that the second class cities operate, they're general law municipalities, they as well as first-class cities are general law municipalities unless they're home rule, and it's only the home rule municipalities that operate under a charter. Everything else operates under general law, and in that respect, they are governed by the statutes, but adopt ordinances to control the or to run the local government. And in that respect, as Representative Grusendorf said, anything that the local people want to set up in those ordinances, if they want to have that referred to the people for a vote on the tax limitation, that's certainly possible. I think one thing that we probably need to look at, and I mentioned it in the testimony that I think you have in your packets, but is that at the present time there are only three second-class cities who are collecting any property tax or levying any property tax out of that 117. There are 61 of the second-class cities have sales taxes, and some of those have sales and something else, and then there are another seven that have other types of taxes. So the property tax is not a very popular tax with second-class cities, and one of those reasons is for a 5 mil limitation, it's really inefficient to collect, to assess and collect a property tax if you can only get 5 mils. The other issue is that, of course, a lot of the property in the second-class cities is non-taxable. We support.
I think we have a question from Representative Martin on that point. Representative.
Well, I have a couple of statements and a question. About 10 years ago, Senator Arnold Strukalewski did a tremendous job, and it took almost 2 years, if not 3 years, to delicately balance and change Title 29 for all municipal powers of each level. And this was part of it. And people of the second-class communities thought that they did have the rights. And you know, some of us tried to attempt to change Title 29 a little bit here and a little bit there, and it's always resistant from the municipal league. Oh, no, we went through such a crisis before. We don't want the delicate balance to be undone. But this here is more than a delicate change, and I don't think that the average citizen knows that we the first line to Representative Hanley question is Section 1, Article 1, Article 9, which I hate. It just says all powers of taxation shall never be surrendered. Well, instead of the people having powers of control taxation, it's the legislature. And therefore, we have the responsibility, which I don't believe is right, because local government should be free to tax as they want, with the caveat that the people will control local government. But since we don't do that under that article and section, then we have this responsibility for second class and first class and all local government. But I think it's a major, major difference in Article or Title 29 to remove that section or those two words. It's a major difference. Are you speaking on behalf of the municipal government?
Sir.
And,
yes.
Have you polled them?
Chair Representative Martin, I have not polled them. I have consulted with several people, and generally speaking, we do have a resolution that was attached that supported the concept of removing the limitation on the ad valorem taxation. We do not have in this it does not say by referendum or not, but I know that the second class cities and the local officials in the second class cities that I deal with on a very regular basis believe that if they are being given the responsibility to manage their cities, particularly in a time when the resources from outside are being cut back, that they ought to have the authority to do that as well. If you had to have a referendum vote every time you wanted to change a mill levy, it makes for very inefficient operation of government. Among other things, it costs money to have elections. It's a slow process.
It's a democracy.
Well, I guess my concept of democracy is more of a representative democracy, that we elect our local officials just as we elect you to make some decisions for us, and I don't expect you to come to me every time you make a decision and say, what do you think about this, and vote on it. I feel that I have the responsibility as a private citizen to come to you if I don't agree with you and tell you what I think, but I would never expect you to ask me to vote on every decision that you make, whether it has to do with taxation or land use or lots of other things. So that's a difference in philosophies of government. So.
Chairman, may I interject?
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the time that we went through Title 29, I don't know if you were part of it. I was part of it with Representative.
I'm thinking back in our other life when we were on the Title 29 Revision Committee, and Tam Cook was a young lady.
Right. Well, during that time, the whole thing had changed because municipalities didn't really have to tax, because we were to the point at the state level where we're handing them money right and left, and even considering giving them $1,000 per capita and other schemes we had going. So it really didn't make any difference. But now with the change, while we're trying to get the local political subdivisions to maximize their revenues available to them, that's why this is here, and that's why they're asking for it. And I look at municipalities... things that they can do by ordinance. I know that my community once got angry about the municipality selling municipal property, and so by ordinance, I think, that anything over $50,000 of property had to go before the voters, any sale. So you can do all sorts of things with your ordinances to impose a spending limit upon your council. And elections are won and lost on those things.
See, I would suspect, and we're talking about the referendum, if we would ask the city council members of any one of these 117 cities, they would say the word referendum shouldn't be there. And I'm sure that probably if you put the question to the voters of each one of those 117 municipalities, the majority of them would vote that it should be there. So it's... I'm just going by the experience we went through with the city of Wasilla.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, that might be, unless they thought about how much of their city budget was going to go to run that election and how it was going to slow down the process of responding to our current needs. And as I say, there's no reason to not require a referendum if that's what the local voters want. And I think you need to remember, too, that most of the second-class cities, as we found, are less than 400 people. Many of them are 200 people or 150 people, and believe me, local officials in those communities and decisions made by local city councils do not go unnoticed. And it's not only just the election, but I'm sure that people are there and they know what's going on. So I think the public has at least as much input as they probably would in an election process.
But I'm sure that second-class city would suddenly find himself with a 20 mil property tax, the people would take notice, but it would be after the fact, maybe then instead of before the fact. I don't know.
Well, I guess I would suggest that that's not going to happen.
Representative Parnell?
Is Representative Olberg's amendment before us at this point, or has anybody moved
it? No, we had just kind of generally asked the municipal league to come back with some responses on these questions.
I think I made the motion before its last session.
Yeah, we still have some folks to be heard, though.
Yeah, it's still open.
No, we voted on your motion, if I recall, in which the prevailing side remove the word referendum. So if you wish to bring it back up again, Representative Martin, you'd have to move that we rescind. But let's hear from the rest of the folks who want to testify.
Mr. Chairman.
Smith, did you have anything else you'd like to add at this time?
I don't believe so. You had asked me to respond just to the 20 mils. I believe that makes sense in light of the differing responsibility of the different types of cities. And
we take a question from Representative Brown, and then we'll move back to the teleconference. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Coming back to the issue of the state dollars at stake, if I'm calculating this right and as making the assumption that there are 6 miles of pipeline within the community of Delta Junction, it looks like that would be $312,000. And do I understand then that could be a potential loss to the state of $312,000? Is question one. Question two is, are there other communities that would be situated to tax state assets that would have large effects on the state's revenue?
Through the chairman, Representative Brown, the municipalities are not allowed to tax state buildings or facilities. The pipeline is being in private hands is taxed, and it may be taxed up to 20 mils, but if you tax it up to 20 mils, that means you're taxing yourself at that amount, and I think we discussed last week that the municipalities that do have pipeline property with them do not tax at that level. But, I mean, in a, you know, in a theoretical sense, that would, you're right, that that would be that much. But there are not, there are no other state assets that would be.
Mr. Chairman, I misspoke. I didn't really mean state assets. I guess I meant things which are within the state's property tax base that would have, that this bill would affect by essentially transferring revenue from the state to the local community.
I believe that the oil and gas property is the only property that the state applies a property tax towards. I could be wrong on that, but that's the one where the interplay between the municipality and the state comes in, and this 20 mil issue of the state getting whatever the municipality doesn't tax up to that 20 mil.
Alaska's, I shouldn't say unique, but Alaska is one of the few states that allow local municipalities to tax, like the pipeline. I asked a question of MAPCO again last night with the, they have 10,000 miles of pipeline, they said, in which they distributed gas, oil, so forth. And examples that they gave, they did pay property taxes, but it was directed to the state and not to local governments.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to check with Steve Van Sant if there was, if he had anything to add maybe to Kay Brown's question. You might, he's the property assessor for this.
Sure. Steve, were you able to hear the question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The client I talked about, there's only three possibilities that we're aware of where municipalities might try to tax the pipeline. That'd be Delta, possibly Glen Allen could try to reach out, and then the Copper Center area. Other than that, I don't know of any other areas that might try to incorporate and get any of the other assets. And the pipeline is the only other asset out there that could possibly get them to state coffers, so it wouldn't be anything else to answer Frank Brown's question.
Okay. How about a borough? I know in the past the Mat-Su Borough or the North Star Borough has talked about incorporation of adding annexation, I guess I should say, areas of the pipeline. Would this also facilitate that to be done if those areas were annexed, that they could then tax up to 20 mils?
Well, naturally, if a borough is formed, they could go.
They could already do it, right?
That would have nothing to do with the bill before us here.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we did have Mr. John Hartle who wishes to be heard today, too. So.
That's on the next bill.
I'm sorry, Jim. Okay, do we have anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard? Did I miss anyone on teleconference? Robert Alford, did he wish to be heard?
No, Chairman. I thank you, but I was waiting for the next bill before you, HB 406.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We will move the discussion then to the committee. Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my memory don't serve me right from the other day, but would you bring me up to date? Do we not have amendment number 2 in front of us, or deferred amendment number 1, as the main vehicle now?
Well, let me go through my stuff here. Amendment number 1.
1, yes.
Carol's going to help me. Let's stand at ease here.
It needs to be amended again. Where you left off.
Maybe we didn't need to adopt the amendment. We just actually voted not to change.
Here that took place, we had amendment number 1 was moved. Then I believe we had a motion to
delete.
Carol?
Sorry.
If you'd just run through the series of where we were.
The amendment had been moved by Representative Martin, and then Martin had made an amendment to the amendment to put back by referendum. A vote was taken on that. The vote failed. Representative Martin then withdrew his motion to adopt the amendment. Representative Hoffman then moved the amendment. Representative McLean made a motion to delete Section 2 of the amendment. Mm-hmm. And then the questions came up with regard to property, pipeline taxes and the effect, AML, etc. And so therefore, Representative McLean withdrew her motion to delete Section 2, and the motion was left at that point, last then having been then that Representative Hoffman would have moved the motion.
And so what we have before us then...
Ooh, that was a painful recall.
Amendment number one, as moved by Representative Hoffman.
Who's not here. Oh.
Since Representative Hoffman had moved, we had a motion to amend by Representative McLean to delete Section 2. So really what's before us at this time...
That I withdrew my my motion to delete Section 2 until we had further information on this section.
Okay. Do we have enough information on the section, or do you see...
What I don't understand is why the sponsor is repealing Section 2, because it's for a community that may be incorporating as a second-class city, and so they can request at that time that a property tax proposal be placed on the same ballot. I couldn't understand the reasoning for having that section here.
It's in conflict with the new Section 1.
The question then is, what is the reason for, on the amendment, Section 2 being repealed there, AS 2945-600 being repealed?
I have a Section 2945-600 combining property tax with incorporation of a second-class city.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the question?
So that when they're going to be incorporating as a second-class city, that they may put the tax proposal into the ballot. Mm-hmm. But I just couldn't understand why you'd want to repeal that part.
Why'd I want to do that, Dave? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Well, on the original bill, remember there were two sections. There was the last statute, 2945-590.
Mm-hmm.
In 2945-600, and then this amendment just is the 600.
Well, I would imagine, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that the because we are repealing within the rest of the bill the referendum provision, that it was thought the referendum provision should be removed from the incorporation question. Although I don't see that that is I don't see that repealing 2945-600 is necessary. I think that was.
Representative Henley?
Yeah, and I brought this up, I think, originally. It was just because it's a may, it gives them the ability when they're initially petitioning, I guess, to, if they choose to put them both on the ballot, saying they want a tax at the same time, or they don't have to, they could just go ahead and do it without it, and the Assembly could then impose the tax under this bill without the vote of the people. But because it was a may, it seemed to give more flexibility. It wasn't specifically tied, but...
Now that I've had a better chance to look at this, Mr. Chairman, the incorporation petition may request that incorporation be dependent on the passage of the property tax proposition. And from an initial incorporation standpoint, I guess upon reflection, I would be inclined to delete Section 2 of the amendment, which repeals, in fact, that provision.
So Eileen can make her motion.
Okay, so...
Which I believe is what Representative McLean wanted to do.
Chairman McLean would like to make the motion to amend.
Well, I'm still unclear if there may be an indirect conflict with this section, this amendment on Section 1.
The old communities couldn't make it.
They used to be made by
the section.
The incorporating into second class city. Okay, and the incorporation fails the tax. Okay, I will make a motion to amend the amendment number 1 by deleting Section 2.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion on the motion to amend? Any objections to the motion to amend?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Terry?
I just didn't hear. I was writing something down.
Oh, I made a motion to amend the amendment number 1 to delete Section 2.
Are there any objections? Hearing none then, the amendment to the amendment has been adopted, so section 2 of the amendment has been deleted. We're back to the main motion now as amended. And the main motion as amended is what Representative Martin was discussing earlier. Do we have any... Representative Martin?
Well, Mr. Chairman, only one last discussion on it is that I'm glad that the representative from Barrow, just did repeal this, delete Section 2, because that's my major point. Even a new community that may want to incorporate, they should have the right to say from the very beginning what their tax level is going to be. But on the other hand, in Section 1, those who have already incorporated, and it's a may also, no, it's not a positive thing, it's a may, by referendum, decide on a tax or approve a tax, or may by referendum disapprove a tax. So new corporations may have that option. Those who already incorporated, should they dissolve now? Because they lost the basic rights of referendum?
I believe, though, that Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, that in fact a new incorporation, a second-class city decides to incorporate, wants to impose a tax on themselves to do whatever, they would be limited to the 5 mils by law.
Mm-hmm. But we're not.
And if a second-class city wanted to incorporate and charge themselves 10 mils for some specific purpose, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, my point, sir, Mr. Chairman, for me, mm-hmm. is not the amount, 5 mils, 20 mils, 50 mils, it's the right of the people to control the purse strain, control whether it be assembly people or local council people, whatever you want to call them, from digging in your pocket. It's too late after I elect the Honorable so-and-so, and he and so-and-so wants more money for the community council that's getting wild beyond power, and they have uncontrolled limits to your pocketbook or your property. It's too late for me to say, well, I'm going to get rid of you the next election. I believe in really basic, and it really goes back to the fundamental rights of the people.
What we're going to do, Representative Martin, if you wish to move that we rescind our action in failing to adopt the motion to amend.
I didn't see enough votes here. I know you can go through another ways. I've also many times today.
If you wish to move it, we will give you your opportunity to argue it. But
unless someone else does it, we've been through it once. It's like you crying on the floor, too.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move for Terry so he can argue.
I do have mixed feelings on it. I had a vote on it once. I guess I'm kind of glad if I don't have to vote on it again.
It depends if I'm your friend today, sir. Okay.
Any further questions or discussion then in relation to amendment number 1 as amended? Are there any objections to amendment number 1 now as amended?
Object.
Object. Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Henley.
I think the amendment makes the bill better than the bill, so I would support the amendment. You can have concerns. The original bill goes to 30 mils, and I think this takes it to 20 mils, so I think that makes it a better. I would encourage people to support the amendment, and people choose not to support the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Martin?
I think it's half a loaf. What the representative from Barrow did in that is a big step forward. So I'll reserve the option to do it on the floor for the other half. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, could he also reserve his remarks so that they're very limited?
I'm going to preach like the Honorable Chair did on the floor today.
Are the objections maintained? And if they are, we can call the roll for amendment number 1. Are the objections?
I'll maintain my objection at this time. Thank you.
I'm sorry?
Please call the roll.
Please call the roll.
Representative Martin.
Yes.
Representative Navarre.
Yes.
Representative Parnell.
No.
Representative Terrio.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No, pass.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes.
Representative Hanley.
Yes.
Representative Larson.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I made a mistake.
Representative Martin?
I should have said no. May I have the privilege to change it?
Representative Martin wishes to change his vote from yes to no.
I wondered about that.
That's why I passed. I thought there was something wrong here.
I was thinking of the amendment.
Yay, yay, two nays.
Mr. Chairman.
Please note that amendment number one as amended has been adopted.
I was actually kind of hoping to be left alone as the lone vote so I can know what Representative Martin usually feels like.
We'll give you a chance on your own, though.
Now, we have the sponsor substitute for House Bill 397 as amended back before us.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McLean.
Move to... what am I...
Table?
I'd like to... move the bill, House Bill 397, as amended with individual recommendations. And... if there's any fiscal notes, the accompanying fiscal notes.
No, there's no fiscal notes.
There are.
Zero fiscal notes. Are there any objections to Chairman McLean's motion? Hearing none, then, this bill has moved from committee with individual recommendations. And those on the teleconference line, I want to thank them for being with us today. And thank you, Representative Olbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and distinguished members of the Finance Committee.
Yay.
I waited till after.
No. Yesterday, we moved House Bill 364. House Bill 364 had to do with the permanent fund dividends in regards to the Merchant Marines and Public Health Service, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, before the bill moved very far beyond our clerk, we had a couple of fellows who had talked to the prime sponsor, so the bill was held at that point. So I guess the question before us, do we want to take it down to the clerk's office, or what does the committee wish to do in regards to House Bill 364?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parnell.
Since I was one of those fellows, I would like to move to rescind our action on House Bill, what was the number?
364.
For a couple reasons. One is... I should have objected yesterday when the bill was moved from committee because I don't think we should be expanding the permanent fund dividend program in the way that it was being done. We have to address the entire issue of allowable absences, I think, instead of tacking on more people. When we tack on the Public Health Service and the Merchant Marines, I have to agree with some of the arguments made yesterday that that's going to open the door even wider to adding on Red Cross, Salvation Army. I mean, pretty soon we're going to have an exempt or an allowable absence for everything. And so I have deep concerns about opening that up. And I'm happy to revisit those questions with that bill or any of the other bills that are coming before us. But I just would like to rescind our action on that bill and bring it back to committee.
Okay, so we do have a motion that we rescind our action of having moved House Bill 364. Any discussion on that? Representative Terrio?
Mr. Chairman? I would add that I did talk to the sponsor of the bill, let him know of my intentions to do that, and he of course would rather have it out of committee. I thought I would let the committee know that. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Terrio?
I just wanted to make that clear. I was the other person that talked to you, and I wanted to just make the members aware that Representative Parnell and I did go to talk to the Representative Nordland about what we intended to do.
What did he say?
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, are there any objections to the motion?
I would object.
Hearing objections from Representative Foster, discuss.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah,
I object in the sense that I think it's gone through due process here. We listened to it quite some time yesterday. I think any questions should be brought up on the floor rather than wasting any more time here. Certainly, if you've made your feelings known to the sponsor, I think that would be sufficient. But for us to go through the agony here again, I don't think is fair.
Representative Navarre?
Chairman, on one hand, I agree with Representative Foster. On the other hand, I talked with the sponsor also, and given the committee report that we passed out, there was only one due pass, and one of his concerns is that maybe with a little more work, it would be potentially made, more acceptable to enough members of the body to actually pass. I think that's one of his concerns.